This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we have completed my week at the Magic Castle as far as the chats go that I had with various magicians who were in and around the Magic Castle. But while I was in Los Angeles, I took my microphone to various locations, actually within the Magic Castle and outside of the Hollywood area, but staying within the Los Angeles area, to talk with some other magicians or people who have an interest in magic, whose podcasts, those chats, will be coming up in future episodes. But this week, I thought it was kind of interesting to coordinate the release of this podcast with the release of something new. I spoke with Sarah Skilton, who is the author of a new book that was just released on Tuesday, the 25th, that is called Club Deception. This is an interesting book, and I thought it would warrant a little bit of a discussion here, because typically that magicians are not necessarily shown in a good light in film nor in books. It seems that usually that we are the villains or some sort of bad guy or crazy or deranged. And also, when you see this in magicians depicted in movies and in books, oftentimes they may be fantasy, and I think there are plenty of those out there. But this was a unique enough book that I felt like that it warranted more than just a cursory look. I think it needs to kind of go in depth with the author and learn a little bit more about her and the book itself. It's interesting also because it's from a woman's perspective, and it's about a fictitious club called Club Deception, a private club that's in the Los Angeles area that specializes in magic, and it's only open for magicians. I wonder if there's any parallel to that. Well, anyhow, the idea is that she has a different approach and perspective, and I think that you will enjoy it, and I enjoyed reading the book as well. I think that you'll get a kick out of how she came up with this this idea, and she has apparently written other books that are youth fiction, and this is her first foray into adult fiction. And so while I was at the Magic Castle, I had made arrangements several weeks in advance with her publicist to have her come to the castle and for us to get together down in a little room next to the library where we can kind of have a quiet little cubbyhole that we can chat for a while. And so this podcast is the result of that. Now, this particular podcast is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word, who are the financial supporters. And in particular, I would like to welcome this week Dennis Wilson. Thank you, Dennis, for your financial support and becoming a friend of the Magic Words. It's because of people like you that were able to keep this podcast going. And for others who might be interested in learning more about it, if you'll just go to themagicwordpodcast.com or go to patreon.com/themagicword, you can learn more about how that you can help support us as well. So thank you guys, and if you have the financial means for doing so, I would encourage you to go out, and even if it's $1 a month, heck, that's like a quarter per episode or less. So, or if you want to just buy me a cup of coffee each month, say $5 or $6 or whatever, whatever you can afford, that'd be great. So this week, again, we are featuring Sarah Skilton, and she talks about her new book called Club Deception. I hope that you will enjoy this as much as I enjoyed having an opportunity to chat with this lovely young lady. So, please welcome Sarah Skilton here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. And we are here today with an author of who's been writing children's books for a number of years, and she has just about to release her newest book, which is going to be her first attempt then at an adult novel. And she is also married to a person who is her husband is a member here at the Magic Castle, because we are still having my week at the castle, the Magic Castle. So I'm having just some different chats with people here from the Magic Castle. So I want to introduce to you author and not really magician, but a wife of a magician.
That's right.
This is Sarah Skilton. Hi there,
yes.
Sarah.
Hi there. It's really nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. I was thrilled whenever I had gotten the email, you know, from the publicist, first of all, telling me something about that. Now, on my podcast that I get emails from time to time, people saying, hey, I'd love to be on the podcast. And I am very selective from the standpoint that I probably say 95% of the people I talk with are friends of mine, people I've known or worked with or whatever. And so it's nice to have kind of a nice casual conversation because that's all it is, just a conversation. And in particular, that whenever I get an email saying that someone has something that they want to sell or pitch or whatever, you know, that's not what this is about necessarily.
Sure, yeah.
But if it's something that is really interesting and completely different, like yours is, that I think that it's something that should draw the attention of magicians that they should know a little bit more about.
Thank you.
So that's why I really, when I had got this from your publisher, I thought, you know, I think this would be a little bit different. It's not a book about tricks, and it's not a book.
It couldn't be because I don't know the answers.
Well, there you go. As you said, when you go to the library
over
here.
I had to make things up or ask my husband for a little help on the final draft. Like, does this still make sense? Is this how this works? And he was very gentle with me. Sometimes he would say, you know, this doesn't mean what you think it means, but let's talk through it. You
know? Okay.
So he was very helpful at the final stages. Once I had all the story worked out and I had the draft finished, I said, okay, can you look through this for the magic aspect?
Did you have other magicians look through that as well as your husband?
No, I didn't. I just relied on Joe, and he has, you know, such a wide library at our house, that was really helpful. And he had some things to recommend that I read. But I really am one of those people who doesn't want to know. I don't ask him how he does it because it kind of ruins it for me. And any time that I have found out, either through happenstance or he said, oh, you know, can I show you what the tactic is and tell me if you can see it? I'm always a little sad when I know. So I definitely have spent my research for this book being deliberately ignorant of certain things as much as I could. I don't want to spoil it for the readers either.
I want to
keep the air of mystery.
I kind of felt that way as I was reading through the book. By the way, the name of the book, of course, is called Club Deception.
Yes.
And we'll get to that in just a few moments. But I was thinking also, that there really weren't any tricks that were described. There are a few effects and an act that was described that was something completely different that sounded fictional,
but
and very creative, and plaudits for that. But kind of going back to the beginning over there, that again, being married to then to a magician, he's a magician member. How did you first meet him?
Was it,
were you attracted by the fact that he was a magician or what?
I didn't know. So we met in college. We actually met when we were 19. And I always tell people, you know, don't rush to come up with a major. If you're in school and you're not sure what you want to study, you're not sure what your passions are, wait until you find out. Because I didn't have a major. I had started my sophomore year at Ithaca College in upstate New York. And I still didn't have a major on the books. So I was in an introduction class as a sophomore. And he was a freshman. So we got to be in the intro class together. And that's how I met him.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I instantly thought he was cute. And I just kind of thought he's the one for me. But we were really good friends for about 2 years before we started dating. And he wasn't a magician at the time.
I see.
He loved it as a kid. And he got back into it once we had both moved to LA. And he always was interested in the Magic Castle. He always enjoyed going when he was lucky enough to meet somebody who might give him a pass. But he didn't become a magician member, I think, here until about 2004. We'd gotten married that same year as well. And every year for, you know, Christmas and birthdays and holidays, I would get him a new magic book. For a while, it was strictly a hobby, and then it became his full-time job. And I was really proud of him. You know, I said, if I'm going to try to be a writer, you can certainly try to be a magician. You know, we're in this together. Let's go for it.
Right.
There's no reason for you to have a job that is a 9-to-5 that you're not in love with when I'm trying to be a writer, which is something I do love. So we both kind of entered into it as a thing that we could help each other do. We're both freelancers who work from home, so we have very odd schedules. And we like to say that between us, we have one job. But we're both very happy doing the things that we love.
But he's a full-time professional magician then as well? Okay.
Yeah, he does trade shows. He does private parties, weddings.
Everything like that.
Everything. Anniversaries.
Right. So do you see yourself kind of as Jessica, as the part in the movie?
Maybe
or in the
a
book?
Little. But I, you know, she's really sort of brought into this scene as sort of a young trophy wife. And Joe and I are exactly the same age, and we've known each other, you know, for 20 years. But I needed to have a newcomer. I needed to have an entry point for the audience. And so I decided Jessica as the new young wife of the established magician would be a good, a good entry point.
So you moved to LA because this is a place, I guess, that had opportunities for entertainers and also for writers. Were you thinking also about writing, like script writing and things like that, maybe getting the film?
So, yes, that was my original intention, as so many of us come out here to be actors or screenwriters, and it's very difficult to break in.
I would think so. You got to have contacts. That's the main thing.
Yes, that really is. Whereas in publishing, I found that the quality of the work is still very important, but if you send somebody a sample or a finished draft or magazine articles that you've written, clips that they call them, then they'll hire you based on whether they like your work. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have met them, you know, at a networking party and stayed in touch or have somebody's cousin's dentist that you call up, you know, all those convoluted ways that people break into show business.
You never know,
I found that it wasn't as difficult to break in to publishing. It wasn't easy, but it wasn't as difficult.
So is that because of the accessibility through the internet of self-publishing and that kind of a thing?
That's part of it. You know, I decided to go the traditional route. I wanted to have a lit agent, and I wanted her to advocate for me and send my stuff out to the editors and publishers in New York. And living in LA, I was a little worried about that. But it's worked out really nice. And it doesn't matter that I'm on the quote-unquote wrong coast, because there's lots of authors in LA, which I was a little surprised to find out about. But there's a big, robust community of writers out here that aren't in screenwriting.
Do you get together with them from time to time, or have some sort of a group or
luncheon? You know, I used to have sort of a weekly writing night at a friend of mine's house. And, you know, I'll get together for lunch and dinner with my friends to just talk about the state of the industry and what we're working on and what we need help with.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. You brainstorming like magicians will be sessioning with each other. It's kind of having, you know, here's a card trick or here's what I'm working on, that kind of a new thing. So, and then I can help you out. Like when I was coming here to the castle, that I performed my set before our local magic club and got good feedback saying, you know, suggest this or that. You might tweak this or add this and take this out or whatever. And without any fear that someone's going to steal your act. And so I'm wondering how protective that you are of your ideas, because intellectual property is something that's kind of, you know, funny, when particularly when it comes to writing something, and you have to be pretty protective that someone might publish it before you do. They write it quicker. But you never had that problem or issue or
you
thought?
Know, I think when I was much younger, I was worried about that. But now that I've sort of been around and I've seen how it works, I realize how extremely difficult that would be. Let's say, you know, I went out to lunch with somebody that I didn't know very well and I told them all about my new idea. They wouldn't be able to duplicate it. Even if they took the core premise, they wouldn't have the same voice or the same style or tone or the exact same characters. And they wouldn't necessarily have the passion for it that the person who originated it would have. It would be difficult for them to start from scratch, even if they said, ha ha, I'm going to steal this, you know. So I don't worry about that much anymore. Although I will say, my friends make fun of me a little bit for this. Whenever I go over to like Publishers Weekly or any of the trade publications for the publishing industry, if I see that a book has sold that's about magicians, I'm always like, oh no.
Could it be?
You know, and, and it's fine. You know, it's not going to be the same as mine. It'll only help. Because if there's interest for books about magicians, it sort of expands on it. And then you can get that author to maybe help you blurb your book where they, where they put a nice comment on it on the back of the book. So it's actually really good when there's other books on a similar topic, because that just brings more interest to it and a bigger audience. But I can never quite convince myself of that whenever I see that something's sold that's vaguely in the same ballpark as mine. I'm working on that.
And your major in college, where'd you go to school again?
Yeah, I went to Ithaca in upstate New York. And
did you go to NYU, or whereabouts did you go?
I didn't. So Ithaca is it's in the Finger Lakes region by Cornell. And I eventually did settle on a major of TV, radio, and
That was my minor
in writing.
My major was journalism, and my minor was radio and television.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. You said you were from Chicago, and I went, I'm from Southern Illinois. I went to school at SIU in Carbondale.
Oh, great. I love Chicago. Going back there this weekend. And I lived there my first 18 years. Then I went to New York, so I've had the extreme weather of Chicago and New York, but I love LA the best. I'm very spoiled out here.
The traffic is what kills me. That's what, I mean, I could live here except for that.
I can understand that. I had a terrible commute for many years, and it really sort of soured me on that. So I'm really happy to be working from home now.
Yeah, your commute is just to the other room.
Walk down the hall.
And when you're writing, do you find that you, some things come easy, or do you find that you kind of grind over a paragraph and it may take you a week or two, or and then you, once you get kickstarted, I mean, you know, there's always that writer's block that you hear about. You know, I used to write a blog, and I have done a lot of writing and had a lot of things published from in all the magazines, magic magazines.
Oh,
and I've never really had that writer's block, but I used to have, again, a monthly column that I used to publish called Scott's Thoughts. Mm-hmm. And they were just ideas that were gleaned from conversations that I'd had with other magician friends. And each Saturday morning, I would sit down for a couple of hours and kind of download my brain. And sometimes it would just come off quickly. Other times I would write a couple of things and I have to come back to it then the next week or whatever. It just takes a while. So what is your process and in order to keep away from writer's block?
Yeah, sure. The only time I've experienced writer's block was after, if something just very difficult happens in my personal life, then I might have to take a couple weeks or a couple months off because I just don't feel that spark. But that hasn't happened in a long time, luckily. Usually what ends up happening is, I open up my Word document to get started.
There's
and of course, what
page.
Do you see? You see either the white page, or if you've worked on it for a little while, you see the first scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes will get in a rut where I will just be like, no, the first scene must be perfect. So I'll keep working on that instead of moving forward with the story. But luckily, the new version of Word, and I didn't know this, my husband just got the update for me. And when you stop writing and you close out the file, when you come back to it the next day, it automatically shoots you to the point where you left off. So that's been immensely helpful. It sounds like such a small thing, but it just propels you forward and says, okay, this is where this is your starting point for today. Don't go back to page one and start over and start to fix every little thing, because otherwise you'll never make any progress. So lately that's been very helpful. And usually what happens is if the idea is sort of fully formed, I just need to know what's going to happen in the next scene so that every day I know what I need to do. I don't like to think about it much further than the next couple of scenes.
Okay.
Because then it sort of mires me and bogs me down.
You can't get bogged down, sure.
Yeah. Or I keep thinking about the end game rather than what's occurring now. Mm-hmm. And the writing reflects that. It won't be as smooth. It won't be as organic or as emotional. But if I just keep about one or two steps ahead from where I'm writing and just further around the corner of where the story needs to go, then that's usually the best way for me to work. So I have the art of discovery.
Right.
Seeing what the characters will do when they're sort of left to their own devices.
But you do have a general idea going into it. This is going to be the general theme. We're going to have, this is how the person gets to the tree, getting up into the tree, and how they have a conflict to get down. So you have something in mind to begin with, but then you plug in all the pieces. Is that correct?
Yes. I would say that's accurate. I like to know the conclusion, just not in specific details.
Sure.
You know, the general conclusion. So I can work toward it in a way that feels natural.
Right.
And that,
because you said you've written children's books before, and again, this is your first adult novel.
Yes.
And in that case, when I think of children's books, for the most part, I think because of my grandchildren are just reading, something, but that are very rudimentary. But I assume that this is really more like a young adult novel, not the one here, Club Deception, but others have been stories in and of themselves. So not a picture book, basically, kind of a thing for like 5-year-olds. Yeah,
that's
it's more like for teens, I guess, kind of thing you had been writing. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my first two books, the first one was Bruised, and it was about a girl who's a black belt in Taekwondo. And the second one is called High and Dry, and it's sort of a noir mystery set in high school.
Mm-hmm.
They were both definitely for, I'd say, 12 to 18-year-olds, although adults could certainly enjoy them, and I would love for a larger audience for them. But with teen books, I found really the only rule, and this was something I just sort of gleaned from reading so much of them and from writing them myself, was that the ending had to at least have some hope in it because your audience is very young.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a cynical or a dark or a depressing ending, that does them sort of a disservice because they are so young. There's always a different ending. You still have so much time to get things right or to move past something that's been difficult. So I made it a point to have the endings be hopeful. Didn't have to tie up every single loose end or make it sunshine and puppies, but at least there is a core of hope. And I feel with adult books, you have just a little more freedom to kind of
be dark,
draw on, kind of yes, be darker, draw on their whole life experience rather than just a, a very
well, the youth, teens
part.
Have only had limited experience, when a girl has a pimple or something saying, oh, that's the end of my life or something, or I didn't get invited to prom or, or whatever it is that my life is over. But as you get older, you realize there are a lot of experiences like that that are good and bad.
Right.
And so that you can draw on all those experiences of maturity, basically, in the adult novels.
Yeah. And with Club Deception, I did something different. First of all, I wrote it in third person instead of first, and I had multiple character points of view. So there's four main characters, Jessica, Claire, Felix, and Kaime, who don't really know each other at the beginning. But by the end of the book, they've all sort of bonded over this murder that they've tried to solve. And and because they are members of the club, the Magic Club, Club Deception. So that was a lot of fun for me to just have completely different backgrounds, completely, you know, different genders, different age groups. I really enjoyed sort of stretching my wings in that way instead of strictly teens.
Right. And in doing that, I thought that was unusual as well, that each of the chapter titles were based upon that person. In other words, Claire, so this is kind of like what's happening with her right now as the story moved forward, as opposed to it being chapter one, chapter two, chapter, but there was actually, so it was about that person. So it may be long or short, depending upon how much that that person was contributing to the storyline to move it forward.
And it was fun to sort of intertwine them and see where they would bump up against each other and who would get along with who would sort of not get along initially and how they would overcome that. And I also just sort of enjoyed having the freedom that they do have a lot of experience and they have lived a little. It's not the first time around the block for them, so to speak.
Right.
And that was entertaining for me.
Let's do something also, just if a recap of actually or a summary of what the book is about.
Sure. You know,
like what would be on the jacket?
Yes. Well, I used to sort of try to pitch it as The Prestige meets Desperate Housewives because, you know, it's a modern, a little bit of a soap opera. It's definitely sort of dramatic, has these dramatic moments. But I also wanted it to be a sort of a juicy escape for people, especially with how the world is right now. I know that I'm always looking for escapes with my books. But essentially, it is about a magician rivalry and a stolen routine that erupts into murder. And as you're aware, the vast majority of magicians are men. And in my book, I touch upon that a little bit. Claire is not a magician because she has terrible stage fright, but she is sort of the secret weapon behind her husband's success all these years. And when they have a falling out, she decides she's going to help his apprentice win the big magic competition to sort of get revenge on him. So she's able to coach somebody, although she never takes the stage personally. So I sort of had a female magician character, and then she's surrounded by the wives and girlfriends of the other magicians who are all part of this Club Deception, and they all come together and bounce off each other and have to solve this murder that takes place.
And it's about 350 pages or so, you know. It's, I mean, was this something that it just kept going on, or as you were filling in the scenes, what was that like as far as
I sort of had to figure out each character's arc, you know, where who will they be at the beginning of the book and who will they become at the end of the book and how do they get there and what are the reasons for this? So, you know, you have the girl who's only pretending to be a magician's girlfriend so she can have access to the members of the club because she's trying to sell some stolen goods, some mythological papers that S.W. Erdnase is rumored to have written that have never been found before. So she's got this artifact that she's trying to sell sort of underground, under the table, because they're stolen.
Right.
And she's pretending to be a girlfriend of a magician, but she really doesn't know anything about magic. Then you have Jessica, who's the young wife who loves magic, and she loves being part of the club, but she's a little uncertain because she's new to town and she and her husband had a whirlwind marriage. She realizes, what do I even know about this guy? He might have a dark past. He might have murdered his first wife. So she's got to sort of dig into this relationship with her husband and find out who is it that I married. Then you have Claire, the expert. And then you have Felix, who's the newbie. He's a former baseball player who's been injured. And now he works at a magic store that I made up called Merlin's Wonderporium because I just thought that was a funny name.
It is a funny name.
And he would love to be a magician, but he's not quite there yet. So he really needs Claire to sort of coach him and teach him how to get better. And the way they all interact was just really fun for me. I grew up watching soap operas. I really loved the show Lost back in the day because it had a mix of every genre.
Of characters, sure did, yes. Each one of them had a story as well. That you know, so they went deep on each of those, and like you have with each of these characters as well, because they have interesting backstories.
Yes. And they have, you know, the action-adventure aspect of Lost, the mystery aspect, the romance aspect. I wanted to sort of throw everything in that I personally enjoy in the hopes that other people would also enjoy it.
Now, in calling on some experiences that obviously with your husband being a professional magician, then there are some things I assume that you said you wrote first and then you asked him that, hey, what would you think about this or should this be filled out first? And then you did some research here at the library, I guess,
I did
the
a
castle
little
here?
Okay. Yeah, you know, I was I was prohibited from the nonfiction section, which I respect and I completely understood. So I had a bunch of books that I'd read. Jim Steinmeier, of course, has written some incredible books.
Yeah, Hiding the Elephant and all that. So, yeah, yes. That's open to the public, right?
And The Last Greatest Magician in the World, yep. I very much enjoyed. And I read some fiction, Greer McAllister's The Magician's Lie. And Victoria Kelly wrote a book recently called Mrs. Houdini, which I really enjoyed, which was a mixture of fact and fiction. So I did research at the Magic Castle Library and the regular library. And then whatever I'd sort of gleaned over the years, you know, it's been about, gosh, I think I said 13 years since my husband became a member here. And we used to come a lot more frequently, and I could sort of eavesdrop from time to time and see what would get the magicians riled up and what things they would enjoy discussing and sessioning over.
Sure.
So I did a little bit of sneaky research. And I made up a big magic routine just from my imagination.
Right.
And then asked him, you know, would this even work? And he said, well, I'm not sure, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Because it's a novel and you can make up whatever
sure.
you want to do.
Right.
Which was one of the most enjoyable parts for me was making up my own magic show because I've seen
you did.
Him.
You were Claire in that one, you know, and kind of developing
a little
that.
Bit. Yeah, exactly. And he'll run his tricks by me sometimes like, oh, what do you think about this pattern? And, you know,
don't you
what
get
about
tired of that sometimes? I mean, my wife has kind of gotten to that point. I mean, she's assisted me in my shows.
Oh,
but
good
also,
for her.
But also whenever I'm just doing a card trick or something, it's like, yeah, that's fine. You know, she's just not the best audience for me to get good
sure.
feedback. Are you kind of the same way
you
with
your husband?
It depends
if I'm in the middle of something.
Okay.
So if
yeah,
I'm
maybe
clearly
that's yeah.
eating or I'm clearly reading a book and he just comes over and says, hey, check this out. I say, okay, just a minute.
Yeah,
you know, I want to see it, but
like,
I also
yeah.
want to finish what I'm doing. And he's excited about it. Which
sure.
is good.
Yeah.
And I am flattered that he wants my feedback.
Yeah.
From a storytelling standpoint, I can sometimes help in that regard. Can't help at all with the tricks.
Yeah.
Can't help
technical.
At all with,
yeah,
yeah technique. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Not only do I not know how he does the tricks, I don't know how he gets up in front of audiences, you know, or
really?
Does table side. Like, that's a foreign world to me.
So again,
you know?
That's kind of like Claire from the standpoint that you have a little bit of stage fright as far as standing in front of an audience and
bit.
Talking to a group like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like we're one-on-one, so I feel
sure.
comfortable.
Yeah,
but
course.
Getting up and doing a reading from my book, I always get nervous, fluttering,
right.
or huh. I just think, oh gosh, am I going to stammer? Am I going to, you know, am I going to talk too fast? Are they going to even hear what I'm saying? So I definitely have a little bit of
well,
that.
Well, that is something certainly that magicians have to have, and that is a big ego. And that's what they talk about, you know, getting all magicians in one room. There's not enough room for their big heads, you
sure.
know, to fit through the door.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly you have to have that ego, I believe, if you want to book yourself, because
yeah.
when people call and want to contact you, you want to say, well, this is one-stop shopping. Don't call anybody else. I'm the last call
right.
you should make to book this show. Not only that, but whenever that you're
yeah.
doing some strolling and walking from one group to the next, you have to say that to your in your inner scripting that you're saying to yourself that whatever I have to show you and say to you is more important than whatever conversation you're
yes.
having then right now.
And that is
you know?
So amazing to me, you know, and he makes people feel at ease. He goes
sure.
up to them and he makes sure he's not interrupting. If they look like they're having a deep conversation
sure.
at dinner, he's not going to interrupt. But he just has a good way of drawing them
of
in.
Of endearing themselves.
Yeah,
yeah,
I love mm-hmm. watching him perform. I love to watch the reactions of the audience and see what they respond to and what makes them smile and
sure.
gasp. That's really a joyful thing for me.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so I was going to ask about Erdenes, that this does play a part in there. Did he tell you about that to begin with, or how did you know about the secrets?
That's a great question. I had written another book about magic that was never published
oh,
about
okay.
10 years ago, and I did a lot of research on Erdenes for that particular book. And while most of the book just belongs under the bed, that's okay. It was a first
yeah.
attempt at a novel. I was
yeah.
just learning that I could eventually finish a book, so mm-hmm. it had its purpose, but it was not publish worthy. And I was able to draw on a little bit of the research I'd done 10 years ago and bring that back
okay.
into this book. I did find it so fascinating that no one knew his identity, that
yes.
it's this big secret to this day.
Right.
I love the mystery of that. I love the romance of the classic magic and the card
right.
cheats and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Well, there actually, I had done a podcast, I started off earlier saying, you know, that I'm kind of selective as far as people who are not good friends of mine that I mm-hmm. that I chat with over here. There was another fellow who had contacted me about a documentary that he is doing on, it's called The Expert. And he's trying to find
fabulous.
Who Erdenes was and talking with various experts, you know, Richard Hatch and a lot of other people who he's been asking, you know, what have you heard? What have you done? You researched this person and that, and also going back and talking to some people who this fellow who I guess had done the graphics, who had drawn the photos, you know, from the book, and, you know, his conversation they'd had. It's going to be fascinating, but he's trying to have an Indiegogo kind of a crowdfunding thing to help raise money for the documentary.
I need to help out with that. That sounds amazing.
And so that's going to be coming up soon. I've been waiting. I've been holding that podcast back because he's also apparently a cameraman that's been working on a reality series, been working on The Bachelor. And so he said, I've kind of got that in the daytime and I'm working on this other thing. And then I'm trying to put together this Indiegogo. And so he keeps putting it off and putting it off. But eventually he'll have this thing out. And he's got a couple of clips that are out there. Phenomenal. But it looks like it's really going to be quite an interesting movie.
Oh,
but it
I
is
can't
a,
wait.
It is certainly a mystery that hasn't been solved. And it's almost one of those things, I think, like your book alludes to, that do you really want it to be solved?
Right.
You know, it's almost better to have some secret that even magicians don't know.
It's fun to speculate.
Yes, exactly.
It's fun to wonder.
Yeah. But going back even to that first book, you said that's under the bed and hidden away, you'll never see the light of day. what made you try to go after looking for Erdnase even back then? I guess, did your husband tell you about that? Or how did you?
I think he must have. I'm trying to remember how it came up.
I mean, the general public doesn't know who Erdnase is.
Right,
I've got
right.
a T-shirt that says Erdnase University, and I get I get comments. People frequently say, "Where's Erdnase?"
Oh, I love it.
Erdnase, or you know, whatever they say. I say, "Well, it's a card college." What, you know?
Right. I think what really drew me in, I believe it was the book, "The Magician and the Card Sharp." I think my husband recommended that book to
John Scarney, I believe.
Gosh, I'm so terrible.
That's okay.
Remembering. But I really, yes, I think that's right. I really enjoyed it, and I loved the idea that there was this theory that he had made some type of Faustian devilish bargain to keep his identity a secret for all of time, you know, if he could be this expert and that his book would remain in print.
I will sell my soul.
Right.
Kind of a thing.
I will not receive credit for it in my era or maybe even ever, but it will live on.
Yeah.
It will be immortal. And magicians from here till the end of time will study it. And it'll
could
be their
be a
Bible,
book in that.
You know?
That could be kind of interesting sometime to have something that sort of devilish type of devil and Daniel Webster kind of a thing or something, you know. Wow.
Yep, and guaranteeing the immortality of his work really grabbed me by the throat. I thought, oh, that's great. That's a good
–
I just thought, what if he had written some more books?
Right.
What if there were some lost papers out there? What would magicians do if they found out about it? What lengths would they go to get it for themselves?
And that part of it was really kind of tangential to the rest of the plot line. I mean, that you have in Club Deception, that it talks about other kinds of things. But it's interesting that you bring that in, as well as some other things that magicians who are reading can kind of, you know, grab hold of and say, oh, I know what this means. I wonder where this thread's going to be going. And so it makes it kind of interesting to wonder, you know, about that as well. As well as some of the tricks and the places that you talk about. Now, again, the place itself, the fictional club Deception. Tell me where that came about. Where could that possibly be?
Oh, I know. So it's funny, you know, obviously the Magic Castle is such an important part of the LA magic scene and the Magic Circle in London I was lucky enough to visit many years ago. And it was so different from the Magic Castle.
They're both different. Yeah.
Obviously, of course, magicians can session there and hang out and see performances, but just the element of it's more of a sort of you go down into the bar and it's a real clubhouse. Whereas I think of the Magic Castle, it is a clubhouse, obviously, but there's a lot more focus on performances, you know, the close-up room and the parlor and the stage magic and the sort of hidden nooks and the museum and everything. And I thought, well, what would a third club be like? What if I made it like a speakeasy? What if it's actually really a secret and only magicians know about it? And no lay people are even allowed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I liked the idea of it being an underground club in both senses of the word. You know, you have to know where it is. You have to know the password, which is changed daily.
Mm-hmm.
There's no people who come in who aren't either escorted on the premises by a magician. You're not allowed free reign. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to have regular audience members popping up except for twice a year during the competition. And I like the idea of making it even more exclusive so that it could be very much a boys' club, really.
Right.
And I liked the idea
of... But they had the wags.
They do, yes. They have the wags.
Explain what wags
are. Yes, the wags, which kind of came about because the soccer families in Britain, you know, posh... Spice is the most famous wag. You know, David Beckham's wife, she is the top wag. She's the wife and girlfriend extraordinaire of the football or soccer scene. And I like the idea of magicians having a similar setup where the wives and girlfriends can get together for Sunday brunch once a month. And who else is going to understand what it's like to be married to a magician but another magician's wife or girlfriend? And I really kind of wanted that to be real.
Right.
And so I thought, well, if it's not real or it's not official, I'll write about it. I'll make it up myself. Mm-hmm. And I liked the idea of the women getting together and having a dress swap day and having outings and just doing things that were just for them.
Right.
I come to the castle very infrequently now because I live a little farther away. But for a long time, you know, I would come once or twice a month with my husband, and he would just light up, and he had so many people to talk to. And sometimes I just felt, gosh, I wish there were some more wives and girlfriends around that I could speak with while he's sessioning and while he's doing his thing.
Sure.
So I thought, if it doesn't exist, I'll make it. I'll make it up.
And the club itself then has a lot of, I guess, secret panels and different kinds of
it
things.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. The sort of the secret rooms. And
was that a fun thing to kind of make up?
Doorway. It was. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I came to the castle, one of my favorite things was the telephone nook.
Yes.
Where when you close the door, something very spooky happens.
Yes.
And I thought, gosh, there's just so many opportunities. And of course, Irma, you know, it was very tempting to have an Irma in Club Deception, but I decided I better not start taking things from real life.
Right.
Yeah. I better leave it to have its own magic at the real magic castle.
Yeah. Right. Right. I think it's phenomenal, the world that you created like that.
Thanks.
It seemed also, as I was reading this, that it's from a lady's perspective, not that you had written, a man could have written this as well, but not as well, because of the insight that you have to certain things. And I'm not saying that it seems like it was for women only. Certainly this is for all readers. But I felt in a way this is something that my wife would read rather than
that
me, almost.
That is my hope. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted it to be enjoyed by anyone who likes magic.
Yes.
But the working title, when I was first writing it and first brainstorming it, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago, the sort of secret title was Magician's Wives, because I thought that's something I've never seen. Most books about magic are either historical novels, you know, the golden age of magic in the 20s or even the 1800s, or there aren't any women in it at all, or it's sorcery. It's not
real-life real
magicians
magic.
Who've practiced and who've put blood, sweat, and tears into it. It's that, oh, I have magical powers, like Harry Potter, which I love, or even Lev Grossman's The Magicians. You know, it's fantasy.
Yes.
And I wanted to write about magicians in modern-day L.A. And
or somebody who's bad, who is a criminal or a villain. You know, he's a bad guy.
Right, exactly. So I wanted to write about modern-day magicians, and I thought that would be a nice way to do it, is to bring the women in. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, from the perspective, again, that I felt like it was a book for women, because it was from your perspective, because there were more women central characters, and it was from their perspective, as you mentioned, Felix being one and Cal being another, who is the primary magician. But it was mostly about the other ladies, as far as the interaction on the chapters over there. And you say this being your first novel, certainly that, say, your first adult novel. There were not just sexual innuendos. I mean, there were sexual scenes when you were writing the thing. And it seemed to get a little bit more steamy towards the end.
Yes.
And as I was reading through that, it was kind of funny because it hadn't been too much, you know. And I was reading this on the airplane also towards the end, and I was thinking, gee, are people reading this over my shoulder? It's like 50 Shades of Grey all of a sudden. You know, I'm reading, holy moly, you know, a little bit steamy there.
That was the soap opera element coming through and the romance element, yes.
But it seemed to get, you know, more towards the end. So I was wondering that if in the editing of this, did you feel as if, or maybe that your editor said, hey, you need to put some more of this, and so you put more at the end, or did it just happen that way, or was it organic that it built up to that way? Or?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There were some scenes toward the end that were originally in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I rearranged certain things to hopefully maximize the journey of the reader of keeping things more secret until the very end. And sort of the love scenes also fell along that same path where I had a little bit more graphic scenes at the beginning, and my editor said, let's save these. Let's hold on to these until the end so it'll be more emotional for the readers. Now that we get to know the characters, it'll mean more to them.
It's kind of like Jaws when, you know, it's partway through the movie until you actually see the jaw,
the
shark come out of the water. It's like, you know,
you gotta
startling.
Have the anticipation.
Yeah, exactly. It's anticipation building up to seeing that shark. Mm-hmm. So the same thing, anticipation, because of when Claire and Felix were together and then they wanted to get back together. He wanted to get back together with again, but it's just, it's interesting.
And the reason also that I didn't do too many chapters or too many storylines from the magician point of view was because I wanted to keep the magicians as mysterious and unknowable as possible. So Jessica's worried, like, who is this guy that I've married? We got married so quickly after we first met. And if I did a chapter from Cal's point of view, that would sort of put a pin in that sense of foreboding. Because if we know him and we know his point of view, we won't be as nervous around him.
Right.
But if we only have her perspective, it's a little creepier. It's a little more magical. It's a little more mysterious. So I definitely kept the magician point of views down to just Felix, who's sort of a newbie. Yeah. Yeah. I deliberately wanted to keep them a little hidden and a little, you know.
That's a good idea.
Scared of them. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't pull back the curtain too far.
Right.
You know, at the beginning. So that way until the end that it all you know, kind of folded together. It's like, now I understand, you know, and then, which I guess a good crime novel, you know, should, with something that kind of piques your interest in the first chapter, as this did, and then you kind of develop the rest of the characters and getting into that.
Right.
You know.
And since it opens where we know somebody's dead and we know who it is, you sort of view the characters differently.
I did.
Yeah. Because you think, is this the person who did it? Or is it this person?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that was what I liked about that. It's like, yeah, that this person is dead, but now we know that. And you're introducing these characters because obviously one of them did it.
Right.
And what would have been the motive? Because as you're telling their timeline in their lives, that you kind of get an idea, well, maybe they could have. Well, this could have, the person had good motive also, you know. So it was fascinating, you know, from that standpoint then as well. So,
Thank you.
It did make for a nice read. Do you ever see that as perhaps being written into a screenplay of some sort of a movie?
Oh, gosh, I'd love that.
Well, of course,
I'd love that. I kind of thought about it as the first season of, like, a Netflix show.
I could see that.
Yeah, where you have a full story,
yes,
but there's room for some more stuff.
Because you developed
to continue.
A location, you've developed characters, and they're still alive. And there are other
when
things.
When you have a central place where people meet up on a regular basis,
right,
that lends itself to all sorts of stories.
Because there are other people who can come and go, not just the central characters in this, there are other characters then as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that you, I'm not going to spoil the last page of it, but where you certainly left it open to speculation
more
as to what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that would be, you know, kind of like the next season, what's going to be happening. A friend of mine, John Gaspard, has been writing a series of books that are about a fictional magician living in Minneapolis. And the same thing there, that each time that he basically is solving a crime, and he's a magician, and his ex-wife is married to a detective, and certain things happen, certain people die, and he gets involved with this because he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, or he seems to have the suspicion.
Attracts trouble.
Exactly, attracted to him. And so he has to kind of get out of it in a little way. And he was telling me that his editor with the press that was publishing the book was saying that, well, why don't you have him use more magic like Harry Potter? He said, no, that completely gets away from the central character that I'm trying to have. You know, Eli Marks is the character's name, and that Eli is a magician and performing, and so he shouldn't have a magic. It's like, you know, something he's trying to keep as magical powers. He doesn't have any magical powers other than just his knowledge of how to use sleight of hand and psychology. And right. And so I think that's good that you're keeping true to that as well, rather than having doors open automatically with a magic wand, like you say, Harry Potter-ish kind of a thing.
There's no dearth of fantasy books out there. I wanted to fill a niche that didn't have
that's
anything.
Exactly my point. That's what I was going to say is, there are lots of fantasy books out there, but this is something that's going to be completely different. And I can see how this would kind of open the door to other types of books to follow. And is that something that you have in mind then, that you're hoping
to
do that?
Or? It sort of just depends on how the books do.
So you haven't started on a second one already?
I have ideas. We'll put it that way.
Okay, but
I have
you haven't
notebook.
Actually put it to paper yet.
Right. Well, I have some possible plots to continue on from this point and some possible mysteries to be solved down the road. And if there's enough attention and if there's enough interest, then I'd certainly love to write another one or two. Yeah.
Is this going to be paperback, hardback?
Yes. It's
print
a
print on demand? What is it?
It's sort of, there's three ways you can get it. It'll be in an audiobook, it'll be an ebook, and also trade paperback. So it'll be at Barnes & Noble and Amazon and all those places. And my publisher has been fabulous. A lot of publishers don't give you input on the cover, but they had three artists that they were thinking about. They sent me some samples of their work, and I said, oh, hey, I really respond to this person the most, although all of them are nice. And they, you know, hired him to paint up an original cover, and I couldn't be happier with it.
Is that the one that's on the playing cards over here? So yeah, it's kind of fascinating. It's
sort like of something vintage that's looking.
I was going to say vintage, kind of an old detective, kind of a Sam Spade type of a thing, you know, a look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Detective noir of some sort over there. So I can see where that would be. It's an attractive book cover, and what they say, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. In this case, you can.
I
an idea.
They will. Yeah,
over there, it looks attractive. You know, it's an attractive cover, so it'll be an attractive book. You know,
that's my hope, and you always want people to pick it up, flip it over, and read what it's about, and hopefully hook them.
Yeah. And then, as you said, also have some testimonials from perhaps from some other people who have enjoyed the book and they recommend this. You know, like I had a quote about one of John Gaspard's book, and was saying that Eli Marks would be like if David Copperfield and Sherlock Holmes had a child. You know, love child.
Perfect. Perfect. I want to read those books. That sounds really good. I was very lucky. John Armstrong was kind enough to read an advanced copy and write a blurb about it.
Nice.
So that'll be on the back cover.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Good. Now, this is going to be available when again?
July 25th.
Okay. Yes. And released everywhere at that point.
Everywhere. Books are sold.
And at website, is there someplace where people can go to aside from Amazon?
Yes. And there's actually an excerpt up right now.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone goes to my Twitter feed, which is Sarah_Skilton, Sarah _Skilton, that'll have some links to an excerpt, the first couple pages my publisher put up. And there's also a giveaway at Goodreads right now. If any of your listeners are on Goodreads, it's a great site for book writers, readers, lovers, haters. So we're giving away 10 copies between now and I think July 2nd.
PDF copies or hard copies?
That would be a hard copy.
Okay. Wow, nice. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You just go in and enter your address and they put you in. We're sending out the raffles right now. And then the real book will be out July 25th.
How many copies are they going to print in the initial run? Do you know?
Oh, that's a good question. I want to say around 10,000 copies.
That's a good run. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it'll go into a second printing if people are enjoying it.
And just in English, I assume, so it's not available in other languages
that's
currently?
That's right. Right now, I sold the world rights, and we have some feelers out. There's always the conventions in Germany and other places, the book conventions where they try to pitch it and hope to get some foreign interest. That would be a dream come true for sure. Yeah.
Well, that was what I was going to ask also, as far as where you would go to let people know about this. I mean, you're going to be going on a book tour. Is that kind of a plan and go to bookstores and signings and that kind of a thing?
I will. So I live in Santa Clarita, and the Valencia Barnes & Noble is hosting an event on the day it releases. Mm-hmm. It's a Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock, and Joe will be there. He's generously,
do some magic?
He will. He'll do about 10 minutes of magic, and then I'll read a little excerpt and maybe do a Q&A.
Yeah.
And then I also have a couple library visits planned, panels. I'll be going to an event called BoscherCon in Toronto. It's in October, and it's for mystery writers.
Oh, okay.
And they have 3 or 4 days of panels and events and ghost walks and whatever, you know, they can come up with that mystery readers would love. So I'll be doing that. I'll just be wherever I happen to be traveling this summer. I have events planned. So I'll be visiting my sister in Boise in August.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great secondhand bookstore, I think, called Rediscovered Books that'll be hosting me there to do a signing. And
you're going to be coming down to Texas or Houston by chance?
I'd love to.
We've got a great bookstore down there. I believe it's called Murder by the Book or something like that. They're mainly all detective you should love to have you come down, and
great.
I'll try to help promote that if you
thank
are coming
you
to Houston.
I'd
to the
really
local
appreciate
group
that
as well.
There's an event in Chicago this weekend. I'm going home for a family reunion, but it happens to coincide with the ALA conference, which is American Library Association.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be doing a signing there, and we like to give out lots of copies to the librarians in the hopes that they'll order for their constituents.
Well, that all sounds fantastic. Now, as far as the Audible book, you have that already in audible.com, or it's going to be ready then?
I believe it'll be on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and probably Audible as well.
Okay.
I've never had an audiobook done of my books before, so I'll have to find out exactly how that works. But I think wherever you can find the hard copy, you can also find the
Have you listened to the Audible?
I haven't. They were just recording it.
Is it a lady who read it, or do you know that even?
I don't even know.
Okay.
They asked me for some pronunciation guides.
Yeah.
So I put together a recording and sent it back to them.
Like Kaimi
like
or Kaimi or whatever.
Kaimi. And so I did a little research on how to pronounce some of the magicians' names.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward. I'll probably have to just buy a copy for myself just to hear it read by somebody, because I've never had that happen before. Uh-huh.
I would think, since it was written by a woman, that it would be nice to have a woman's voice.
I think so too.
That would read it, because again, most of the characters are right. Female, and it would make, you know, a lot more sense. Also, yeah. It's a nice thing sometimes to have the author read it, because yeah. That the author has the passion and knows exactly what the inflection is that he or she is trying to yeah. infuse in that person's character when they're saying that. For an example, I've heard many things that Stephen King has written. I've loved mm-hmm. Stephen King, but to hear him read his own books, it makes it come even more alive.
Yeah. Oh, you know? I bet. A little chilling. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
this came from my brain, and it's really creepy.
You're going to love it. Yeah. He's got just a little bit of a lisp. I mean, he's not the best speaker right. necessarily, but the fact that you can understand better, you know, it's coming, you know, from him. But
yeah.
It is phenomenal, you know, to hear a lot of times the author actually read that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe hearing that as well, because we listen to Audible books in the car frequently when we're taking long road trips. And I know that there are a lot of magicians out there also who listen to these podcasts. They'll
right.
just put it on a thumb drive or something and listen to it in the car, mm-hmm. you know, as they're traveling, or some people are going out on cruise ships. They'll take a bunch of these from the archives and go out yeah. and listen to them a little bit later. Same thing like with Audible books, you know, mm-hmm. or when they're out jogging or working out at the gym or whatever. Yeah. Not that I do, but I hear people actually do that kind of a thing.
So. The rumors are true, yes.
I don't mean just listening, I mean going to the gym.
Right. So, you
know, and that kind of a thing. So, again, they're going to be available July the
25th. Tuesday the 25th.
Okay, got mm-hmm. it, got it. And any last words or anything as far as that you would recommend, or what do you think people should look for?
They should come to the Magic Castle and see you performing this weekend.
Oh, that's
although
right.
I suppose the podcast
it's
won't
too
air.
Late.
Yep, that's
you missed
okay.
it.
That's all right. Yes. When will you be back at the castle?
I don't know. You know, I usually come once a year, and it depends upon when Jack Goldfinger says, like making sausage, because he's got to grind this together with yeah. another person, make sure that they don't overlap in certain things and that they work well together and that they have a good variety. And so it's yeah. difficult. So he also is probably 6, 8, or 10 months in advance of who all that he has, you know, coming out then as well. So yeah. it's, you know, I've had this plan for a long time to come out. So it's hard to try to even make change if I needed to. Aside from that, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And you have been listening to some of the podcasts. You know,
I
always like to ask my guests what their magic word is, what's your phrase or something. It doesn't have to be a word. It could be just, you know, it's your philosophy of life. What's important to you?
Ooh. Well, I'll keep it sort of publishing related.
Okay.
Write the book you would most want to read. Don't worry about trends. Don't worry mm-hmm. about how other people are going to react. If it's the book of your heart, then it's worth writing, even if it doesn't get published.
Right. Write the book of your dreams. Right?
Write the book of your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's very good. Well, that has been delightful. I enjoyed
thank
I enjoyed the book. And
me.
Thanks very much for contacting me, and tell your publicist also, that, Danielle, that I enjoyed the chat.
I really appreciate
so
it.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Sarah Skilton, and this is Scotty Out.
Well, I want to thank Sarah Skilton for being my guest today here at the Magic Word Podcast. That was recorded while we were downstairs next to the library at the Magic Castle. So we had a good opportunity there to kind of have a quiet environment to have that chat and learn more about her book. I did read it, and I think it's very interesting and a lot of fun. I think that you guys will enjoy it too. If you go to our website at themagicwordpodcast.com, there are various links there where that you can order it through Amazon.com, and by doing that, then we will be supported by them because we're an affiliate of Amazon. So it costs you nothing more, but if you buy that or anything from Amazon, I suggest, if you would please, to go through our website and just click the link, and there you will have the world of Amazon for anything that you want to purchase through them. And a little bit comes back to help us then as well. Towards the end of our conversation, you might have heard her allude to a couple of sites where you could register for possibility of winning a free copy of her book, and obviously that date has come and passed. We've had some other pressing matters and some things that we have been posting here before that time, and so I didn't want you to feel like that you're being left out and that you do have an opportunity to perhaps win a copy of her book. And so the publisher has graciously agreed to give us 3 copies of Club Deception, which is a contest we are running here on the Magic Word, where you can have an opportunity to win one of the 3 copies. This is available to U.S. and Canadian residents. But if anybody enters from outside the U.S. or Canada and whose name is randomly drawn, then you'll be notified how much that the postage will cost. And if you wish to pay for that postage, you can do so. Otherwise, we'll go to the next randomly drawn winner. So if you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com and scroll towards the bottom of this blog, you can find the place where you just fill in the form, and then you will be registered. It's just that easy. And then we just have a random drawing to find out who wins, and you'll be notified if you are one of the winners and requesting your physical mailing address so we can get that right out to you. Also, another thing that Sarah had mentioned, and that was where she talked about the magician and the card sharp. I quickly came in and said I thought that was a John Scarney book, and she was uncertain about that. I was in error on that and wanted just to correct that, and that, of course, was a recent book. I was thinking it was a much older book, but it was a recent one that was about Di Vernon and kind of his seeking out and looking for this card sharp, and the author's name was Carl Johnson. So I want to stand corrected on that. So this way that you, in case you're interested, you can go to the Magic Word Podcast, and there's a link here on the blog also where that you can order a copy of that through Amazon.com. But again, there, oh, by the way, too, that he was actually the subject of a podcast that was done by NPR's Morning Edition back in 2006. And on our blog, if you're interested in hearing that little thing where he talks about Di Vernon and in his book, then you can follow the link and go and listen to that podcast over there then, too. It's a nice listen. I think you'll enjoy that as well. Well, we've, I think, reached about the end of the podcast over here, and I thank you guys for the ride and coming along with us. This has been a little bit different from our usual. It's all magic-related, but a little bit different from the standpoint of speaking to an author about her new book. And by the time that this is broadcast, then the book has been released. This podcast episode is being released on Thursday, July 27th, and so it is just 2 days after the release of her book on Tuesday the 25th. So it is out there and it's available, and you can go to themagicwordpodcast.com and find ways where that you can order your copy. All right, I think that's pretty much a wrap here for this week. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and write the book of your heart. This is Scotty out.